The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The crowds of Americans and other foreigners lined up at installations around Saigon waiting for buses was the cue. It told the Vietnamese that this was the end of the line. For most of those who wanted to leave their country, this would be their last chance. We all decided to try and reach the United States Embassy. And once there, we found it surrounded by Vietnamese looking for a way in and a way out. Helicopters were landing on the roof and inside the compound as we walked to the back of the embassy. We had to push and shove our way through a crowd of several hundred Vietnamese trying to scale the walls, only to be knocked back by U.S. Marines. The American fleet had been having problems since the start of the evacuation, not with the arrival of South Vietnamese pilots and their helicopters loaded with family and friends. Hovering above the decks to unload their passengers, the pilots were unfamiliar with landing their craft on a moving ship. One crashed into the side of the USS Blue Ridge. Others managed to crash land on the deck of the ship. For those that did manage to put down, they were simply pushed over the side and into the sea by U.S. sailors and Marines to make room for the returning American craft based on that ship, filled with evacuees from Saigon. Other South Vietnamese pilots just hovered long enough to unload their passengers and then headed to the side of the ships and just jumped out with their life vests to be picked up by U.S. sailors, their helicopters crashing into the sea. Still other pilots headed out to the side of the ships after unloading their passengers and settled the craft into the water and then jumped out, again waiting to be picked up by U.S. sailors.
50 years on, the fall of Saigon, an embarrassing, shameful surrender for the United States, and it really did just typify many surrenders that the U.S. would see in the years that followed. 50 years, I've got some quotes from "He Was Right." We'll take you back through some of that history on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. I better remember what show this is. This is the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Isn't it interesting that the fall of Saigon aligns with the first 100 days of the Trump administration? You've got two takes on the first 100 days. If you listen to the radical left or if you listen to some voices abroad, I mean, it's been a disaster. It's terrible. It's reawakening a beast in Europe. And it is. Or if you listen to the MAGA people, they're telling you how successful it's been. And to a certain degree, it has been. And yet here we're reminded, and there have been quite a few news segments here in the UK. We looked at them this morning on the fall of Saigon. Again, a shameful surrender. 50 years on, the 50th anniversary of that evacuation, the helicopters flying in, removing the U.S. personnel. Very similar, by the way, to what happened in Afghanistan less than 4 years ago. As I say, it's been 50 years of this. How much of this, by the way, how much of this factors in to the thinking? This is embedded in the MAGA movement. No more foreign wars. No more sending American soldiers abroad. And of course, they're concerned about the problems here at home. And then you see the peacemakers traveling the world, basically just insisting on ceasefires. It doesn't matter so much who wins, who loses. I mean, it used to be, here's the point. It used to be that if America went off to war, the goal, the objective was to win the war. But who was it? Who was it 50 years ago that said America had won its last war, even when America was getting entangled into Vietnam during the 1960s. Who was it that was saying, we're not going to win this? That would be Herbert W. Armstrong, as I say. He was right. He was right. And then you look, you fast forward, you know, to the early 2000s, and who was it telling you that America was not going to win the war against terrorism? Well, that would be the Trumpet magazine. That would be my father. Not that we're pessimists or that we don't want to see America succeed, but there are prophecies in the Bible that talk about the pride of America being broken. There are prophecies in the Bible that talk about America winning its last war. 50 years on, Reuters says the fall of Saigon, about 2 years after Washington withdrew its last combat troops from the country, marked the end of a 20-year conflict that killed some 3 million Vietnamese. 3 million! And nearly 60,000 Americans. You can, again, see the parallels there with Afghanistan. That was just 2021. Communist troops rolled into the South Vietnamese capital virtually unopposed, to the great relief of the population, which had feared a bloody last-minute battle. Reuters says those events were seared into many memories by the images of U.S. helicopters evacuating some 7,000 people, many of them Vietnamese, as North Vietnamese tanks closed in. The final flight took off from the roof of the U.S. Embassy at 7:53 a.m. on April 30th, carrying the last U.S. Marines out of Saigon. I mean, you think about, just think for a moment, too, about how different America is today than even 1975. I mean, at least then there was a willingness to fight against the spread of communism abroad. And since 75, I mean, look at how communist thinking and ideology spread across the United States. There's another section in He Was Right about the communist infiltration. And of course, Donald Trump, to his credit, has at least fought against that. He stood firm against that attack, as you'll hear later. Well, he had the rally last night. He talked about these forces. He's talked about America's sickness. It is sick. And that's what I want for you to just think on for a moment here at the outset of today's program. You see that embarrassing, shameful surrender, that evacuation in 1975, and then you think or ask, are we more morally upright and strong today than we were in 1975? And I think everyone knows the answer to that. And why does this keep happening? Why did it happen in Afghanistan just a few years ago? Well, your Bible has something to say about it. 1975 was, well, it should have been quite the warning for the United States. Here's another bit from some of these news reports on the fall of Saigon. Again, we're 50 years on from it. Clip 19.
This is what the end of the Vietnam War looked like. South Vietnamese soldiers swarming a Pan Am airliner to save themselves from the rapidly advancing North Vietnamese army.
They left their wives, their children, their aged parents on the runway while they forced their own way on board, a rabble of young enlisted men.
CBS News correspondent Bruce Dunning was on board.
The plane raced down the taxiway, swerving to avoid abandoned vehicles, perhaps even running over people.
This every-man-for-himself route played out across South Vietnam as communist forces from the north launched their final offensive. Frantic to find a way out, civilians mobbed the U.S. Embassy.
The last place, the last hope, the last refuge where you could go and maybe still get a helicopter.
There were women at the gates just saying, please just take my baby, take my baby. And we had to tell them, we cannot take your baby.
Jerome Thomas was a Marine guard at the embassy.
There were people that were getting crushed because of the crowd in the back were pushing, you know.
The crowd inside the embassy grounds is just huge, and it's never getting any smaller. You don't know how this thing is working, how it's going to end.
As darkness fell, Jerome Thomas was ordered to lower the American flag.
This was the last time the American flag was going to fly over Vietnam.
19-year-old Marine takes down the flag for the last time.
Heartbreaking.
America's war in Vietnam was now in its final hours.
Now it's probably somewhere around 4 in the morning. I can see the tanks coming down the road.
You could see the tanks.
North Vietnamese tanks, because their lights are on. They're driving down the highway.
Everybody was afraid. The North Vietnamese army was advancing on Saigon.
Everybody knew these were the last birds.
These were the freedom birds.
Ambassador Graham Martin brought the American flag with him.
They had to bring down the American flag as America evacuated in shame. And we saw so many of these same scenes just a few years ago. If you're too young to remember 1975, as I was, I mean, I know a bit about it just from our own literature, from the history books. But if you're too young to remember that, you surely can remember what happened in the opening months of the fake presidency, Joe Biden, as he pulled out of Afghanistan. And these people, desperate to flee from the Taliban regime, chasing after jumbo jets as they were taking off. It's stunning, really, how similar the imagery is. It's something that's played out time and time again. I mean, you go back to the start, you know, whether it's the start of Vietnam or the start of the war against terrorism in the early 2000s, the strong pronouncements. I mean, the George W. Bush talking about the axis of evil, and we're going to go all over the world to stamp out terrorism if we have to. And then you fast forward to Afghanistan, or before that, Iraq, or the fact that we never went after the head of the snake, Iran, and now we're trying to strike a peace deal with Iran, or something where they can get some kind of nuclear power. They're so close to a nuclear bomb. And the diplomats are working hard to strike another deal with the mullahs, as they are with Russia, as they are with Hamas. He was right, as I said. This is the booklet I just want to draw attention to today. There's a section in here on the spectacle in Vietnam. And it goes through all of these quotes from the plain truths of old, going back to the early 1960s. The fall of Saigon, that was in 1975. And if you were a plain truth reader throughout the 60s, I mean, you were receiving regularly tomorrow's news today. I mean, today it seems like ancient history, 50 years ago. But put yourself in the position of a plain truth reader throughout the 1960s. It says several, this is from He Was Right, several analysts at the time realized that a war in Vietnam was imminent. This is in the early 60s, 1961, I think it was. But only Mr. Armstrong was absolutely confident about how it would end. Here they were. The prognosticators were saying, I think there might be war. I think American troops might be sent abroad. And Mr. Armstrong was going ahead of that saying, look, this is not going to end well for America. In April 1965, just months after hostilities broke out, the plain truth blared this headline, Why the United States Cannot Win the Vietnam War. That was in 65. That was 10 years before the fall of Saigon. That's, I mean, there should be Reuters reports on this. There's all kinds of news segments today on this anniversary about that shameful surrender and retreat. But really, they should be talking about this. How did he know? Why was he right? In that article, It says the United States is committed to not win in Vietnam. The late General Douglas MacArthur once stated that unless a nation entered into a battle with victory as its goal, it was defeated before it started. And that's exactly why we said what we said even in 2001, following 9/11, following the start of the war against terrorism. Victory wasn't the goal. There was tough talk, as I say. But you're going after, I mean, in the case of that war, the war against terrorism, you're fighting against an idea. You're not going after a people or a nation. I mean, Iran was the number one state sponsor of terrorism then, as it is today. Then we went, of course, we went into Iraq. We went into Afghanistan. And we avoided Iran. We avoided the head of the snake. And it was the trumpet that said this is not going to end in victory for the U.S., sad to say. A year and a half later, it says, Mr. Armstrong wrote this. This is 1967. The U.S. is not winning, yet the war has been stepped up enormously during 1966. People see no results. People compare the size and the power of the U.S. to that of North Vietnam, a little country hardly the size of one of our states. They can't understand why the United States, the most powerful military nation in the world, can't whip little North Vietnam. And this is something, this touches on something we've been stressing here of late. In these first 100 days of the Trump administration, is that if all the Trump officials are out there cheerleading what's happening, what are nations abroad thinking? I mean, look, as I said on yesterday's show, look at what Canada's thinking. Here it's been one shameful defeat after another, and you've got the communist regime in Canada saying, we're going to be invaded by America. America's the threat. Orange Hitler. And on it goes. In fact, the reality is, America hasn't done so well in wars, and now you've got an administration that wants no more foreign wars. Because there's so many problems to deal with at home. Because America is sick. Listen to what Trump had to say in his ABC interview. This was yesterday. I think he set this up, or his people did, to basically talk about these first 100 days. This is clip 9.
We're doing something that has to be done. We have a country that's very sick. Joe Biden, and it's not him because I don't even think he knew what was happening, but the people around him are vicious people. And what they've done to the country is unbelievable.
And say what you will about this man's flaws, but with respect to the enemy at home, he sees it. And he's fought against it. It's a sickness. Are we sicker today than we were in 1975? And I would submit to you that it's obvious. Yes. Yes, there's some pushback. God had to intervene, as I said yesterday, to save America from being blotted out entirely because of a communist invasion or threat here at home. You've got Steve Bannon. I'll play the clip in a moment, but you've got Steve Bannon this morning saying, look, what we have to realize and understand is that Donald Trump, he's not only fighting enemies abroad, he's fighting an enemy here at home, an internal enemy. And Bannon's right. Isn't it interesting that the fall of Saigon, that shameful surrender, it intersects today with the first 100 days of the Trump administration? As if God is trying to remind us or show us that, look, I did intervene. I did intervene to save America. But let's step back and look at the bigger picture here. Let's look at the history of defeats, at least the modern history of defeats following World War II. Let's look at it. Let's look at what's happened. What is wrong with America, this massive country with so much power? And like Mr. Armstrong said there, you can't whip little North Vietnam? He Was Right says the war lasted another 8 years, ending in the shameful evacuation of American officials from the rooftop of the U.S. Embassy in Saigon, South Vietnam. It was the longest war in American history and was the nation's most humiliating defeat. Paul Johnson, the historian, called it a collapse of American power. And then again, you fast forward to today, for all the strength that the Trump administration has here at home, look at what's happening abroad. Appeasing enemies. It says, during those years, the plain truth often touched on another Vietnam casualty, that of American honor worldwide. Mr. Armstrong wrote, this is in 1969, no military nation can operate a military force by accepting defeat in an enemy attack on the excuse we wanted to save the lives of men who had offered those lives to protect our honor and our freedom. How many more lives will yet be lost in future battles because enemies will now be emboldened by this display of weakness to anticipate easy victories over the United States that is afraid to fight? Again, how are we perceived abroad, whether it's Hamas or Iran or Russia? You see it pretty obviously in Germany. Merz yesterday is telling the EU, yeah, we've got to go it alone. And Germany needs to take the lead. And everyone there in the EU is applauding it like it's, of course, we've got to oppose Trump. We've got to form trade alliances because of what Trump's doing with the tariffs. This was all yesterday. And today we're reminded by the 50-year anniversary of the fall of Saigon that America, as Mr. Armstrong said, has won its last war following World War II. I mean, that was it. From Korea on, I mean, look at what's happened. You can't, it's undeniable. 50 years in these 100 days, and I'll get to the 100 days here in just a second. I mean, you've had Jeroboam pushing back against the radical left, but you've also seen failed peace treaties. You've seen 100 days of the European beast power reawakening. You've seen a lot of human nature on display. We've talked about this for the last 100 days. You've seen a lot of every man or every nation doing what seems right in his own eyes. I mean, all of this shows how desperately this world needs the government of God. It says here, indeed, the war in Vietnam gave America's reputation as a superpower quite a beating. The plain truth pointed this out in February 1978 and then made this stunning prediction. The days are over when the military might of the U.S. is used to accomplish what America perceives as correct and proper. America's influence and prestige is on the rapid decline. The pride of our power has been broken. The time is fast approaching when the U.S. will be so weak and so fearful of its own shadow that as the prophet Ezekiel predicted, the trumpet will sound the call to battle, but none shall answer. That's referring to a prophecy in Ezekiel 7. And then as we say, this is again, all of this is in He Was Right. If you don't have this booklet, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy. You see the 800 number there, 1-866-930-3024. And at the end of that section, on the spectacle in Vietnam, we write, there could have been no more accurate prediction of the years that followed. I mean, look at the years that have followed since 1975. I mean, there have been some ups and downs, but you know, the Reagan years in the 1980s. Certainly we've seen a resurgence of sorts here with the second term of Donald Trump, even the first term. But at the same time, I mean, look at the sellout, as we've talked about recently on this show, to China, to communist forces. Look at how weak the position is for the United States. And everything that Donald Trump is trying to fix in this trade war with tariffs and so on. And, you know, the scriptures tell us that there's probably going to be some short-term successes, even abroad, not so much with peace treaties as we've seen, but there's this story from the Wall Street Journal. China's exports plunge hit by Trump's trade war. It says China's economy showed its first big signs of damage from the trade war as steep U.S. tariffs pummeled export orders and production at the country's factories. It says the sharp pullback shows President Trump's eye-watering tariffs on Chinese imports are starting to squeeze the engine room of China's economy, piling pressure on Beijing to boost its stimulus efforts to shore up growth. It's hurting China, and it's hurting other nations, and that's why they're scrambling. That's why Merz is preaching. That's why the EU is coming together. That's why they're building their military in haste. Even Canada's in on it. I mean, they're caught up in the orange Hitler narrative. They're caught up into it so deeply that they're calling the United States an enemy. This is from the American Spectator. The 100-day marker has arrived for President Trump, and he's winning, which is driving his critics crazy. It's, you see it in the interview with ABC last night. I mean, just attacking him right and left. Here's this ABC reporter, Terry Moran, I think is his name. He's invited into the Oval Office, I believe it was. And just the disrespect alone and the attacks. Again, look at what President Trump is going up against, even here at home, internally, as Steve Bannon said. And deliver he has, says the Spectator, from the border and halting the Biden-era flood of illegal immigration to inflation to using tariffs to restart the American advantage on trade to those pesky transgender issues and on to minor, if symbolic, issues like cutting off the security details for former officials and investigating ex-administration officials who are accused, correctly, it would seem in this space, of trying to sabotage his administration from within on all of these issues and more. The president has run up a considerable winning streak in his second term. They call the first 100 days of Donald Trump a triumph for this administration. Listen to this montage we put together. This is Donald Trump at his best, you know, calling out the regime media, exposing them for their lies, for the bias, the biased coverage. I mean, he's actually doing the reporting for them. At one point he says, hey, what do you think about the auto pin for the fake president? Are you interested in that? Are you curious about that? Have you reported on that? Because it shows he was a fake. He was a puppet. And then the reporter, well, now let's not talk about that. You're the president now. Let's talk about you and your flaws. Listen to clip one.
Do you trust him? Do you trust him?
I don't trust you. I don't trust a lot of people. I don't trust you. Look at you. You come in all shooting for bear. You're so happy to do the interview.
I am.
And then you start hitting me with fake questions. You start telling me that a guy whose hand is covered with a tattoo doesn't have the tattoo, you know.
All right.
I mean, you're being dishonest.
No, I'm not. No, I am not.
Do I trust? I don't trust a lot of people. But I do think this. I think that he, let's say he respects me. And I believe because of me, he's not going to take over the whole. But his decision, his choice would be to take over all of Ukraine. So hopefully a great defense secretary, but he'll be a very good defense secretary.
You have 100% great confidence in
Peter. I don't have 100% confidence in anything. Okay? Anything. Do I have 100%? It's a stupid question. Look.
It's a pretty important position.
I have. No. You don't have 100%. Only a liar would say I have 100% confidence. I don't have 100% confidence that we're going to finish this interview.
I'm going to ask you, if I may, do you think the reputation of the United States has gone down
under your presidency?
I think it's gone way up, and I think we're a respected country again. We were left at all over the world. We had a president that couldn't walk up a flight of stairs, couldn't walk down a flight of stairs, couldn't walk across a stage without falling. We had a president that was grossly incompetent. You knew it, I knew it, and everybody knew it, but you guys didn't want to write it because you're fake news.
All right. Thank you.
And by the way, ABC is one of the worst. I have to be honest with you.
Thank you for the opinion.
You can see why they're big on the orange Hitler narrative. And then look at the influence that that carries abroad. Canada's all in, at least the radical left in Canada. Europe's all in. Orange Hitler's got to be opposed. As Trump said in this interview, I mean, I think it's actually the Bannon clip. He talked about, you know, the enemies abroad are empowered by the enemies here at home. Look at how many people in the media, in government, coming out of universities. They are brainwashed into a position that opposes America. They hate their own nation. You see it all the time. And enemies abroad have been feeding on this, allying with this, partnering with this for decades. And finally, someone gets into the Oval Office that says, enough, enough, put some tariffs on China. And China is suffering because of it. They're used to American leaders that just give them what they want. They're used to abiding by their own set of rules. Forget the international norms. Just invite them into the WTO, treat them like they're being completely normal. And if they cheat, they lie, they steal, so be it. Just let them do it. And let America keep getting ripped off. That's been the thinking. And it's been fueled by the fact that so many of these American leaders have lined their pockets with payoffs from the CCP, including the Biden crime family. And no one seems to care about it. No one was held to account over that. Tens of millions of dollars. This money laundering scheme that went into the family of a president, of a fake one at that, but the president of the United States and his extended family. It's unbelievable. It's third world banana republic types of activities, criminal behavior. And it went on for years and years and years. And to hear them today, Michelle Obama, I lie awake at night because of Trump's deportation. And then all these commentators saying, didn't your husband deport 3 million people? Now, he also had DACA and all those things. He kind of had both sides going. But still, I mean, just as far as deportation numbers go, your husband deported millions. And I guess she was, including Terry Moran, they're all happy with that. But boy, you listen, immigration was, and deportations, that was a big topic for that interview last night. I probably won't have time to play all the clips. But look at what this administration is going up against. Forget about what it went up against in 1975, or in 2001, or in 2021. And all of the shameful surrenders throughout that time period. Look at what a president of the United States now has to go up against right here at home. Play the Bannon clip 12.
President Trump has an internal enemy he's fighting as much as he's fighting an external enemy. In fact, the internal enemy is inextricably linked with our foreign enemies. That's the point you have to embrace. The CCP would not be as powerful. They would not have the manufacturing jobs. They would certainly not have the shipbuilding. They would not have the Navy. They would not have the military. They would not have the technology unless you have open collaborators. In fact, they're not collaborators. They're partners.
They had partners here at home. That's how they became as powerful as they are today. China. We've empowered our adversaries. We've done it for decades. Trump's going up against a lot overseas and here at home. I think this was on Fox News. The negative coverage on Trump's cabinet and allies
Look at that. For Pete Hegseth, 100%. Not one positive story from the regime media about Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. Do you trust him? Do you have 100% trust in him? That's what Terry Moran asked. Well, I don't have 100% trust in you. I don't have 100% trust that we'll even finish this interview. They want Hegseth out. They want Elon Musk out. 96% negative coverage on Musk. 89% for RFK. He's a Democrat. These people are deranged. They're brainwashed. They promote propaganda. They've been doing it for years. Listen to the montage. This is the regime spewing all of this Trump derangement syndrome. Just because he's arrested a judge that was harboring illegal alien criminals, and because he's sending some of those illegal alien criminals home, he's deporting them. This is clip 13.
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace.
Trump doesn't have that. He's got some demonic thing inside of him that can just keep pushing him and pushing him. Mm-hmm.
Was there some profound failure of imagination on our part that we did not reasonably anticipate how effective Trump and his cabal of doers would be? And the reason why I say that is they destroy, they wreak havoc, and they cause so much damage.
The country, I do think we're in the middle of an attempted authoritarian overthrow of American democracy. I mean, I think everybody who predicted that was right.
Right now, President Trump is violating rule of law in every way. And we're fighting him every single day in every way.
In 100 days, Trump has invented something new, clown show fascism.
Are you going to let this administration continue to do things that you know are wrong because you're scared that the president will attack you? Will you stand up for what you know is right? Or will you continue to stay silent because you don't want to upset a bully mob boss in the White House?
And these same people are encouraging lawlessness. You heard it from the guy at the top, Pritzker, I think his name is. Take to the streets. Carry out acts of violence. You've got a good excuse. I mean, the judge, you heard it from Brooks at the New York Times. What she did was unlawful, but morally it was right. It's morally right to break the law. As long as you're doing it to get Trump, as long as you're doing it to hate Trump. Again, where are we today, morally speaking, compared to 1975? Because that was an embarrassing, shameful surrender in 75. And here we are, 50 years on. Listen to this from Jesse Waters. This is, I think, from a couple nights ago, clip 15.
They're saying you can break the law to resist Trump. Not just you, judges, the military, politicians. This is why they didn't think Biden raiding Trump's house was that bad. This is why they don't care when psychos go to Ukraine and show up with a rifle at Trump's golf club. This is why DAs let you vandalize a Tesla and then drop charges. If a judge lets an illegal accused of abusing women escape out of the back door to ditch ICE, they're giving the whole country a permission slip to do whatever's necessary to stop Trump's agenda. An agenda that won in a landslide. And a mandate on border security that was at the top of the list with voters, along with the economy. This is pre-Civil War style resistance. We're getting into traitorous territory.
He's exactly right. Pre-Civil War style resistance. It's, in fact, it's heading to civil war. So you look at all of these problems abroad. Again, Kabul was just 3-4 years ago. Saigon was 50 years ago. Germany's building its military right now to oppose America. Putin's getting what he wants in Ukraine. Iran might get what they want, another JCPOA. Hamas still has hostages. And you've got 100 days
of this administration, which for so many of these resurrections, as I pointed out on yesterday's show, I mean, it's serving as a catalyst, the most significant of which is that final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. There's external enemies and there's internal enemies. How rich of Terry Moran to talk about President Trump's personal revenge against enemies. He's saying this to the man that had his house, his home raided by the Dear Leaders, DOJ, the Dear Leaders, FBI. 40 or 50 agents. But he's concerned about Trump and what, like I said yesterday on the point about Canada, what Trump might do. Trump might invade Canada. Listen to clip 8.
Are you using your powers as president to get personal revenge?
No, I'll tell you what you're really not asking, and you should be asking. There has never been a president in this country in the history that was persecuted like I was persecuted by really crooked people, dishonest, horrible people, and it's been proven. So when you say I'm treating people rough, I'm not treating people rough. I was treated worse than any president in the history of our country. And, you know, people figured, well, maybe that's it. Finally, we got, you know, he's leaving town. There goes the helicopter. And then I came back. And I came back because I have tremendous support.
He came back. Well, he has tremendous support. That's true. But he came back because God made it happen. I made this point yesterday. It's obvious. With the cheating that goes on here for votes, it happens in Canada. It's a miracle that this man is the president of the United States. But you go back to 2 Kings 14. Here again, all this is covered in America Under Attack. We haven't plugged this as much as we did last year, but it's an excellent read that just lays it all out. It shows you God's hand. I heard an interview or some commentary about, I think it was Trump's chief of staff, who said that since July 13, he's a changed man. He's a man on a mission. And he's come back. And these 100 days, again, there's some failures that the administration doesn't want to look at, but there's also some fast and furious activity. Decisions, executive orders, over 100. Tariffs, you know, you go on and on. But here's this dishonest reporter talking about Trump persecuting his political enemies when, as Trump rightfully pointed out, no president, no former president has been persecuted like he has. The lawfare, the assassination attempts, I mean, I got into that last summer and I was astounded that it wasn't headlines for months. You think if a bullet went through the Dear Leader's ear, that the regime media would just move on after like 3-4 days? That's what they did. Trump comes out. Remember the convention. He comes out, he's got the bandage on the ear, and you've got the regime saying, you know, he's trying to, it's all theater. He doesn't really need the bandage. That's the tone that they took within days of him nearly being murdered. Well, Trump took it a different way. He took it as a sign from God that he was supposed to return, and he was. He was supposed to return. We were saying it for 4 years. We were saying it the moment after they stole the election. He was right. And we were right. We were. And it's good to go back and revisit it. Trump sits down with ABC after these first 100 days. And there he is having to do some basic reporting for the reporter. Listen to clip 7.
What do you think of the auto pen? Who wielded the auto pen? Because whoever that person was, think of it, whoever the person that wielded the auto pen, He was really the president of the United States because you are I don't think that Biden knew anything about it.
Fair enough. But you are the president now, and I'm asking the justification for going after people you don't like.
People that I think are dishonest. It's not that I don't even know most of them. They're people that
these
I think
people
are dishonest.
Made you angry.
No, it's not anger. These are people that I think are very dishonest. I don't think they're worthy of being able to go into top secret information. I think that's fine. And Biden did that with many of our people.
Right, but this reporter doesn't care that Biden or Obama or any of them, any of the Democrats, they're Democrats. And so is this reporter. He's a good Democrat. And he hates it when the tables turn. And when you see the DOJ going after this corrupt judge, how does this judge, I went through the details yesterday, but with the ICE agents out there ready to arrest this guy, this Ruiz fellow, who was beating his girlfriend, that's what the trial in front of Judge Dugan was about. And when she hears the ICE people are out in the hallway and she storms out there angrily, how does she even know what they're there to arrest this guy for? Is it domestic abuse? What if he was a terrorist? What if he was, you know, planting a bomb somewhere? But see, her knee-jerk reaction tells you everything that you need to know about these people, about that mindset. They hate their country. They hate America. They want to invite the world in. If they don't invite the world in, like Canada, they don't get those extra 1 million voters. It's part of their policy. It's part of their strategy to stay in power. You do the math. I gave you the stat yesterday. Since 2021, the Trudeau regime has created 1 million new voters. 1 million in just 3-4 years' time. And Canada's got, what, 41 million people? I mean, just expand it on out. In America, that would be, you're making me do math quickly here, but that would be 7-8 million new voters. That swings elections. That's why they're kicking and screaming when Trump sends potential voters home. That's their base. They need their base. A Wisconsin judge, this is Fox News, is threatening not to hold court in protest of federal authorities arresting her fellow judge, Hannah Dugan. So there you go. The judges are in solidarity. The celebrities have spoken for Garcia. Not for the victims, but let's get Garcia back in the country. Terry Moran, for his part, he's there saying, look, you've got a phone right here on your desk. Call up El Salvador and bring him back. And he thinks this is a winning argument, a winning position. And he's just exposing himself as a self-hating American. Listen to clip two as they turn the attention to immigration.
Okay, let's move on to immigration. And as you said, it is an undeniable fact that illegal crossings at the southern border have plummeted, a staggering decline. But there are questions about your methods. And so I want to ask
about my message?
Methods. About your methods, how you're accomplishing
this. Well, they seem
to
work.
Do you acknowledge that under our law, every single person who gets deported gets a hearing first to make their case?
Well, are we talking about people that are citizens of our country or not?
No, you aren't deporting citizens at this point.
Well, let me ask you, did they get hearings when Biden allowed 21 million, because I think the number is 20 million people to flow into our country?
Did they get hearings on the way in? Or he could have asked, did Obama give hearings to the 3 million he sent back home? Did Clinton give hearings to the 10 million he sent home? What about George W. Bush? Notice Moran there says, our law. Now you see, he's an upholder of the law. Our law says you get a hearing. And as Trump points out, that means 21 million hearings, supposing each one takes a few days. I mean, just, you do the math. These people, they want to give rights to foreigners and take away rights from actual citizens. And that's their objective. Listen to this one as they talk about the guy Garcia that's sent to El Salvador, clip three.
This is not an innocent, wonderful gentleman from Maryland.
I'm not saying he's a good guy. It's about the rule of law. The order from the Supreme Court stands,
sir. He came into our country illegally.
You could get him back. There's a phone on this desk.
I could.
You could pick it up, and with all the power of the presidency, you could call up the president of El Salvador and say, send him back right now.
And if he were the gentleman that you say he is, I would do that.
But the court has ordered you to facilitate that.
I'm not the one making this decision. We have lawyers that don't want to do this.
But the buck stops in this office.
No.
Notice they're not reporters. They're preachers. He's telling the president what he should do. Guess what the headline was for the New York Times this morning? I saw the email about this exchange right here. Trump says he could call El Salvador to bring Garcia back, but he won't. He won't do it. He's a dictator. He's a king. He admitted it. I can pick up the phone and bring the criminal back to the United States so he can get a hearing. That's what Terry Moran really wants. A hearing for Garcia, the MS-13 guy. Then they have an exchange. I don't have time to play it. Trump's like, he's got MS-13 on his fingers. It's tattooed to his fingers. Well, I don't know about that, says the reporter. You see, they're very skeptical. When, if it's anything Trump says, it's got to be a lie. He said, I think that might have been photoshopped. I think the tattoos were photoshopped. They're preachers. They're propagandists. Skip ahead to, let's see, play clip six.
Now, but the did law... we give them a hearing when they came in?
Well, the law requires that every single person who is going to be deported gets a hearing first.
Well,
you acknowledge that.
I'll have to ask the lawyers about that. All I can say is this. If you're going to have 21 million people, and if we have to get a lot of them out because they're criminals, we're going to have to act fast. We can't. Wait. Do you think we can give 21 million trials? Let's say each trial takes 2 weeks. Is that what you want us to
do? The law is the law, sir. The law is the law.
The law doesn't say anything about trials.
No, not trials. Hearings. I said hearings.
These people came in. They're not citizens. They came in illegally. They came into our country illegally. We have to get them out.
The law is the law. Every single one of them. 21 million. They came in unlawfully. But now the law, says Terry Moran, the law says they get a hearing. Every single one of them. They're just making it up as they go. Never, never, never did you hear any of this during the Dear Leaders years. Now, with the fake president, the borders were wide open. As the Dear Leader, he seized his opportunity. Hey, now is the chance to flood the nation with illegals. This is what we've got to do to stay in power. We need more Democrat voters. Those days are finally over. They're finally over. And so you get people like Terry Moran. And as Trump points out, ABC's one of the worst. There they are just making things up, pleading for Donald Trump to get on the phone so that he can bring Garcia back to the United States. These are bad people. Okay, they're bad people, but the bad people have rights. That's their position. And they're sticking with it. I had another section here about just, again, what other people are saying or what other nations are saying about Donald Trump's first 100 days. Perhaps tomorrow we can get into more of that and those clips from Friedrich Merz as he's talking about Europe, the new era, basically the new era without the United States. Some chilling developments. Again, he was right. Make sure that you get this this brochure, this booklet. And also, if you haven't subscribed already, you see the 800 number there. Make sure you subscribe to the Trumpet Magazine so that you can receive tomorrow's headlines today. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's show. And we'll see you tomorrow.